So when I look her straight in the eye, I tell her it's over. I walk.
Fucking A.
No, idiot. It was a mistake. I wasn't disgusted with her. I was afraid. You know, at that moment, I felt small, like I'd lacked experience, like I'd never be on her level, like I'd never be enough for her or something like that, you know what I'm saying? But what I did not get, she didn't care. She wasn't looking for that guy anymore. She was looking for me, for the Bob. But by the time I figured this all out, it's too late, man. She moved on. And all I had to show for it was some foolish pride, which then gave way to regret. She was a girl. I know that now. But, I pushed her away. So I spent every day since then chasing Amy.
This is Snails and Oysters.
And welcome to Snails and Oysters, the bi-weekly, bi-coastal, bi-sexual movie podcast. I'm Nat Roberts.
And I'm Allie Rogers.
And it sounded like I said Roberts, which I don't know what that would mean.
Roberts.
So this week for our little introductory banter segment in which we catch up and have a little tea, I actually have a little bit of a game prepared.
Wow, game.
So in this week's film, Chasing Amy, 1997, directed by Kevin Smith, there is a scene in which a character refers to Archie Comics, which most of you probably know as the basis for the TV series Riverdale. Now, in Chasing Amy, the character refers to Archie Comics as a fun-loving and pure bunch. I wouldn't say that's how most people think of Riverdale. Would you, Allie?
I mean, I just like almost, I basically know nothing about Riverdale because actually here's something about me. I was a hardcore Archie Comics fan as a kid.
Were you really?
Like not like going to comic book shops since I just never remember even encountering a comic book shop. But
yeah,
like it was always near the gum at the grocery store checkout. And like without fail, if I was getting groceries with my mom, I would be begging also for an Archie comic. And like they were all stacked by my bed. Like I would thumb through, like I had, they were like falling apart. I went through them.
Oh my God, Allie, like, this is so sweet. I had no idea.
Oh yeah. Like I read and reread them. So when I saw that they were making like an edgy teen, I was just like, absolutely not. Like you will not touch my memories of, I don't understand what Riverdale is. I understand that there are like celebrities, young celebrities being made in, you know, the
for context, I've never seen an episode, although I am working on a movie right now for my day job. I'm the assistant editor on a movie that has a Riverdale actor in it. And that's all I can say.
And that must be a big deal. Like, that's what I understand. Like, I understand. Careful, Nat.
I'm not going to say any more than that. I don't want to get fired. But here, let's pivot quickly.
Yes, quickly.
Before I say something that truly lands me in the shitter.
Yes.
So I've prepared a little game where to show how fun-loving and pure the Riverdale gang are, I have pulled a selection of real lines from the show Riverdale. But I've also pulled some real lines from the show Law & Order SVU.
Oh, my God.
And
Jesus
right
Christ.
Now, Allie is going to guess which line is from which show.
Oh, my God.
And I'm going to keep score.
Okay.
So first quote we have is, "It starts with the tattoos. Once you get the ink, it's just a matter of time before you're begging to be tied up and spanked."
Riverdale?
No, that was Law & Order SVU.
Oh, my God.
Next. "They all have one thing in common. A specific set of genes, the MAOA and the CDH13 chains, also known as the serial killer gene."
I'm going to say SVU.
Nope, Riverdale.
What the fuck?
Sorry. I set you up with the hardest ones. It gets easier from here. Or actually, no, it's still really weird.
Okay.
All right. Next up, in case you haven't noticed, I'm weird. I'm a weirdo. Ugh. I don't fit in and I don't want to fit in. Have you ever seen me without this stupid hat on? That's weird.
This has to be Riverdale. That has
it
to
is
be
Riverdale.
Jughead talking,
yep,
right?
That's Jughead.
Yeah.
And in the show, he wears like a beanie.
Okay. Well, that's just.
It's not even the weird little crown
thing. It's just
thing
not
he has
even.
In the comics.
That's just not even.
All right. Next up. Nothing sadder than white people congratulating themselves.
Okay. I'm going to say that's Riverdale.
Nope. That was spoken by Ice-T.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I dropped out in the fourth grade to run drugs to support my Nana.
Riverdale?
Yes, that is Riverdale.
Okay, who's speaking that?
Some random guy who's in prison with Archie.
Yeah, see, this is just why I could never get on board. Like, stop it.
Absolutely. Stop it. All right, next up. He guest DJs at Triller, and he's followed by Dua Lipa, Lizzo, Billie Eilish. Oh, Olivia Rodrigo.
I'm going to say that's SVU.
That is SVU. Very good.
I feel like SVU is always trying to be like, whatever's happening on the show is also happening concurrently in the real
Ripped
world.
From the headlines. Yeah. All right. Penultimate. I'd like your balls in a blender, but ain't life a bitch?
SVU.
Yes, that was SVU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I think this is our last one. Are you living mannequin suggesting I had something to do with my brother's death?
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and guess Riverdale.
That is Riverdale. Spoken
Who's
by, I think her name line? Is Cherry Blossom.
No.
Yeah.
See, listen. I'm not okay with.
So you got 5 out of 8. That's a really good ratio.
It's actually pretty good.
Congratulations, Allie.
What do I win?
You win nothing.
Okay. See, now this is why we shouldn't do games. You know?
Is this your way of telling me you don't want to Twitch stream with me?
I literally thought you were joking because
I'm actually serious, but we can talk about that off air. For now, we have to talk about this week's episode, mm-hmm. Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
Chasing Amy is a 1997 romantic dramedy written and directed by one Kevin Smith. If you're from the tri-state area, you definitely know who that is. It stars Ben Affleck, Joey Lauren Adams, and Jason Lee. Affleck is a successful straight male comic book artist who falls in love with a lesbian identifying comic book artist played by Adams. Lee plays Affleck's inker slash best friend Banky.
Right. So I just hold on. I'll pull up.
Yeah. Poor Allie just watched the movie. So you're going to have some be gentle with her. She's going through a lot.
So basically, Holden meets Alyssa, and Alyssa kind of pursues a friendship with him. He pursues a friendship with her, mm-hmm. and they get really close, and eventually Holden confesses that he has fallen deeply in love with her. Mm-hmm. This leads to them kissing and then them sleeping together and ultimately becoming BFGF. Mm-hmm. Throughout this, Banky, Holden's best friend, is just really against it. He's against Holden pursuing Alyssa.
He's against gay people. I think we can just say that that's the simple version.
He sucks.
Yeah, they all do. Let's go ahead and put a blanket statement out. Everyone but Alyssa sucks in this movie.
Basically, Banky, in his mission to try to like end Holden and Alyssa, ends up like talking to some people who used to know her and like finding out something about her sexual past in high school,
yeah,
and telling Holden about it. And this becomes a big issue for Holden that he confronts Alyssa about at a hockey game.
Yeah. And basically the big secret is that Alyssa has had sex with men before and just didn't mention it to Holden. And we can get into the specifics.
But
the movie ends effectively with Holden suggesting that he, Banky, and Alyssa have a threesome to solve the tension between them and to help him feel like Alyssa's sexual peer rather than being less experienced.
Yeah.
It goes about as well as you would expect.
Yeah.
That actually is one of the more realistic things about the movie, is that he makes this insane suggestion and she's just like, fuck you.
Yep. Then it cuts to like a year later, right?
Yeah. It just sort of skips ahead.
Yeah. It skips to a year ahead. We're at Comic-Con.
All three characters are there, you know, promoting various comics.
But importantly, they're all there separately. Now Banky is off doing his own comic. It seems like Holden is kind of like dropped out of the professional comic community. He's kind of just doing his own indie thing.
Yeah, he's really like getting into the indie scene, man. You know, really like
he's just doing a small release, stuff. 500.
Yeah. And Alyssa is there with her new partner and her new comic book. So basically Holden shows up and gives a copy of his new book to Alyssa, and it's about their relationship.
Ugh.
And it's called Chasing Amy because of a story that Silent Bob told. And if you've seen a Kevin Smith movie before, you know Silent Bob is Kevin Smith's self-insert character. Man, let's just get into it.
Let's get into it.
I feel like that is the most defeated we've ever sounded at the end of a plot synopsis.
Oh, it's just like, ugh.
Allie, difficult. Let me ask you at the outset. Is this worse than Barbarella?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Is it worse than Deadly Illusions?
That's hard. I don't know.
It might be.
I definitely just really stopped enjoying this film towards, like, it. Ever since they kissed, like Alyssa, ever since Alyssa and Holden kissed, it just really went downhill.
I'll be honest, from the start, this movie, I really wanted this movie to be better than I thought it was going to be. Like, there are times, like Deadly Illusions, where I go in with a hatchet drawn. Mm-hmm. This was not one of them. I was ready to be wrong. And then Kevin Smith proved me right.
Yeah, it's...
I mean...
I gave the movie a lot of grace at first.
Yeah.
Because I... Sophie, relax. Billy, will you call her?
Sophie, come, baby.
If that's audible on your recording, I'm keeping it in. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the voice of famed composer Billy Libby, known for the theme music of Snails and Oysters.
Snails and Oysters, yeah.
But yeah.
So at first I was really trying to give this movie a lot of grace. One, because I heard of it a lot.
Totally.
Like, I just heard of it for a long time in like queer circles. Oh, Chasing Amy, you know, like.
Yeah.
I also knew of a documentary. I don't know if the documentary was finished yet, but a friend of mine from high school was helping produce a documentary called Chasing Amy that was about like, yeah, really funny, really good concept. And I almost texted you like, hey, maybe we should delay recording to invite the filmmaker on to be a guest.
But
to
be honest, yeah.
Well, I at first I was like missed opportunity, but after watching it, I was like, I just am full of anger. And like,
well, I'll tell you what, if and when their documentary comes out, they could come on to talk about that.
Well, that's how I felt. I was like, I'd love to talk about their film, but like, I really just like, I really wanted to give this film the benefit of the doubt because I was like, totally. This is 1997.
It was a different time.
It was a different time and like just a lot
but
of
Kevin Smith was not a different person.
Well, yeah. And but I was trying, I think like especially because I was really enjoying. So I actually lived really close to Red Bank, which is in the film from ages like 12 to like 17.
See, okay, this is interesting because I was talking to my partner T before we recorded, and I said, like, I'm worried Allie might like this movie because it's about dirtbags in New Jersey and you have a soft spot for New Jersey and dirtbags.
It's super true. I have a mega soft spot for dirtbags in New Jersey. And so like I just really enjoyed also, so I enjoyed seeing New Jersey. I enjoyed the dirtbags. I also loved seeing New York in the 90s. I was like, this film is such a time capsule. So, and I was also just trying to like enjoy, like, I like, but it just really all fell apart for me, kind of like from the moment they kissed.
Yeah.
Even that, like to a point, I was like, okay, this is like a film about just like the complicated nature of sexual identities and how they might
collide.
But then, like, I don't know. I was just like really, really upset by the end of the film. Yeah. Like,
Have you seen other Kevin Smith films? Like, I don't know why I said his name like that, but like Clerks or Dogma or anything like that?
I haven't. It was funny. I was looking on Wikipedia about this film and I was like, oh, okay. So this is part of like his New Jersey trilogy, I guess. And I don't think I've seen another film of his. My bad. But
you're not missing much.
Listen,
like when Clerks came out, you know what's crazy is like when Clerks came out, like various like prominent critics were like, is Kevin Smith the next like Jim Jarmusch or Martin Scorsese? Like, you know, this is such a promising debut. Is he going to turn into somebody like, you know, a mover and shaker in this industry? And then he just never matured. He just, it turned out that the limitations of Clerks were his limitations, not his budget. You know, he just, He really is, like, I think of Kevin Smith as kind of, I don't know that he's technically in this camp, but he, to me, is kind of associated in my mind with that subsection of comic book culture that metastasized and turned into a really spiteful group of online trolls because, like, and I think you can see it in this film, especially because it's about comic book artists and Comic-Con and things like that. There's a real sense of entitlement and derision towards anyone who isn't a white guy in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just transparent that, like, I think that if Kevin Smith hadn't become a famous director, he would be on Twitter bullying Kelly Marie Tran out of the next Star Wars movie. You know, there is a real strain of just misogyny and racism and homophobia and a real sense of that sort of I'm a nerd, therefore I'm a victim mentality in this entire film.
Yeah. Ugh, it's just really, it's such a like kind of disappointing film. And in a way, it feels a little similar to me to like 500 Days of Summer.
Totally.
In that like it's about a man going after a woman who pretty explicitly said, tells him not to. And it's kind of, but I think what makes, and I know like people are very divided about 500 Days of Summer and we felt differently about it, but there's at least like an attempt at self-awareness in 500 Days of Summer that I just feel like is not present at all in this film. Like, I just really, truly don't feel like this character Holden, like, even like his actions that are supposed to be this like atonement at the end of the film just feel so
self-aggrandizing,
like
he tells his version of their story and that's supposed to represent that he's grown. You know, he publishes his version of their relationship, which from the looks of it is like kind of tawdry.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was like, are you like, you put this woman through so much like shame, like,
and now you're monetizing it,
and now, well, not even monetizing it, but just like printing her story with her name, like it says Alyssa there, and it's just like, this is like, really, you're just hurting this person.
It's insane. It plays into that ridiculous trope of like white men turning women into art, you know, like it's by far from the worst cliche that this movie plays into. But
yeah, like if she can't be your wife and the mother of your children, at least maybe she can be the subject of your short story or your stupid comic
or your like, stupid fucking ugly comic book
or your bad song or your bad movie. Like,
And I will say, like, when you brought up 500 Days of Summer, the first thing I thought of is, well, at least that's a well-made movie. Like, Chasing Amy isn't even well-directed. It's standard coverage beginning to end. Obviously, there are budgetary concerns, but, like, the framing is boring. The editing is boring. The performances, I mean, Joey Lauren Adams is good, but
I also thought, like, the only interesting, like, moments that were used were, like, I did think there were some fun uses of, like, cutaways while characters were telling stories.
Yeah.
But, like, they're not, like, consistent through the film in a way that like they're just kind of random. And it's funny that you say it's not even a well-made film, because like at one point my boyfriend was watching it with me And he just like, we were just having such a miserable time by the end. And he just was paused and he was like, is anything about this like even a good movie?
Yeah.
Like he, and I was like, honestly, like the only part of it that I am even a little bit enjoying at this point is just like the way in which it's a time capsule for the 90s in New York.
Totally.
There's nothing else about it that I am like appreciating, and I could be missing some element of the craft. But like even fucking like Ben Affleck,
you're definitely like, not missing any of the crafts. Let me just assuage your doubts right now. There's no fucking craft here.
Well, and it's like even Ben Affleck, I'm like, I'm sorry, but this man looks like 1,000 times hotter in a like shitty paparazzi photo of him looking depressed, having a cigarette or like lugging Dunkin' Donuts around. But like, how can you make this man look bad? Like that goatee looks.
Don't get me wrong. I think he's a shithead, but yeah, he's more attractive than he looks in this movie.
That's what's crazy. It's like, and I know I kind of get that he's supposed to be a nerd. Like he's not necessarily supposed to be a heartthrob, but it's like, it was still like shocking to me.
Yeah. It's like actively.
I don't know.
Oh man.
I mean, I'm just like picking it. Random stuff. Oh, totally. Stuff now,
we're picking around the edges because the center of the plate is just a pile of trash. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the first thing I thought when the movie started was like, it starts with a scene at New York Comic Con. And it was so funny to see how that institution was perceived in 1997 as sort of this like dregs of society. Or at least that's how Smith presents it as sort of dregs of society. But really it was like a small community space for a sort of,
sure,
not marginalized, but people with an esoteric interest. And yet here it's presented so derisively. Like the comic book fans are presented as like shallow and like unintelligent.
Kind of annoying readers. Too. Like,
yeah. And like cosplay is played as pathetic rather than, you know, if you look at like cosplay today, it's an art form, you know, it's incredible. I have friends who are cosplayers and they do incredible work.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, and also it's presented as a predominantly white space. And yes, obviously nerd culture still has a lot of complexities around race, but I really can't imagine a story today that would be set in New York Comic Con and talk about race and gender diversity in the comics industry, but present it the way that this movie does, you know? Like that's the first scene of the movie. Let's get into it. Is, you know, Holden and his friend Banky are at Comic-Con and they go to a diversity panel where Holden meets Alyssa at the end, yes. But the first part is their friend Hooper X doing a presentation.
Yeah, it was like a really confusing scene to be watching in 2022 just because in a way, actually, it was kind of funny. I felt like there were like a lot of things that were like about identity politics that kind of were rhyming with this movie that we are experiencing today of just like,
yeah.
I don't know, just, well.
No,
well,
I see where you're going.
Hear me out.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I just think not, it's definitely not the same, but I do think like there's a way in which like identity is like front and center and being like navigated interpersonally and politically that like,
totally.
I was like, huh, this is kind of interesting. It's not the same. And it's making me very uncomfortable. Like, and I'm kind of cringing. So I was really cringing when their friend, basically he's like they're kind of posing as like dumb white idiots asking these pretty offensive questions.
About like Lando Calrissian and things. Yeah. That's it. And it's you don't know that it's a setup at first. You think that they're just shouting
and
racist abuse.
It's so uncomfortable.
It's like, really bad. And then like, Hooper is like a Black Panther parody of a black radical.
Yeah, and like it's really weird because like I think the audience is supposed to feel like haha, like because basically what ends up happening is like it escalates to the point where Hooper like
where the black guy draws a gun and shoots a white man.
Yeah.
In public, yeah, that escalation, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like shocking, and I was just like, what is this film? And then it's like, oh, no, it was just a joke, like they were in on it.
They're in on it, they do this all the time. But that's even worse to me is the thing.
Well, it's just really weird because like they just present it as like, oh, it's supposed to be so funny, and the audience is supposed to be in on the joke and laugh. But yeah, in 2022, it's just like, very bizarre and strange and like offensive.
I mean, I think in 1997 it was pretty bad too.
Sure.
That scene I think would have been bad in 1997.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like especially bad now.
Yeah. Oh, it's doubly. I mean, yeah. If it started out bad, it is only aged worse.
Yeah.
And it's like also the reveal that the whole black radical persona is a front and he's actually like a like gay man privately. But he like puts on this front for his audience. And it's just, it's all of this like.
Well, he does it like for his management, it seems.
Yeah,
like.
It's like a promotional technique.
It's a marketing. Yeah, it's essentially marketing.
I mean,
yeah, it's very.
God, man, it's fucked. It's fucked up. It's a white guy trying to write about things he does. It's like people make fun of Aaron Sorkin today for his piss poor understanding of American politics, but like Kevin Smith doubled down with twice the confidence and half the knowledge. Yeah, like, yeah. Jesus Christ, this is bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get into the bisexuality.
Yeah, so it's actually really funny. I have never ever heard of this spoken as a bisexual film. I have only ever heard of this spoken of as like a film about like a man trying to
date a lesbian.
And so I was honestly even surprised it was like on our list, but I was kind of like, okay, I'm gonna watch it. I'm sure there's a reason. And yeah. I really didn't expect their relationship to like go as far as it did because I've so clearly heard it. Like, this is a film about a lesbian being chased by a guy, you know?
Totally.
And yeah, I think it's, I don't know. It's just so many different movies at once. It's,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's
like, it's trying to be a romantic comedy. It's trying to be an issues drama. It's trying to be a social satire, and none of it's working. It's firing on all cylinders in exactly the wrong direction.
Yeah. And
there's actually, I want to say on the bisexuality topic as an intro, my partner Tiana sent me a really great autostraddle article by the writer Shauna. I can't find her last name, but anyway, the title of it is My Rage at Chasing Amy Helped Me Find My Bisexuality.
Mm.
And she talks about like seeing this movie and saying to her partner afterwards, here's a quote. How can you make a movie about bisexuals and not even use the word once?
What I think is funny is like, I think it's totally fair to see her as bisexual. I also kind of understand. I definitely understand like the lesbians who I've talked to who see her as a lesbian, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
I think it's very open to interpretation, you know?
Absolutely. And actually that comes up in the article, which I'll post in the episode description, is that the author was a lesbian identifying person until she met a man who she fell in love with.
Sure.
And so she was in a very similar circumstance and actually being as pissed off at Chasing Amy as she did, as she was, helped her come into her own as, you know, claiming bisexuality. You know, and it's a really beautiful read. I highly recommend it. But yeah, I think it's a valid read. You know, obviously, like we've always said, labels are only useful insofar as we apply them to ourselves. You know, if a label helps you figure out who you are, use it.
Yeah.
I think part of the ambiguity here, you know, so we've talked about a lot of films with intentional ambiguity. Like I would say like Portrait of a Lady on Fire is a great example where it's ambiguous what the character's sexualities really are. And it's intentional. You know, it's because the author doesn't want to get into that sort of drawing boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
This time it really feels like Kevin Smith doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about at any point. At any point, it's like he watched half an episode of The L Word while drunk and then wrote this script.
Yeah, and I feel like I see the moment that it kind of like, I feel like I see the moment that it could have been a different movie that I actually really could have liked. And that's like when Holden confesses his love. When he confesses his love, I actually think his speech is like pretty heartfelt. There's a lot in it, that especially like towards the end, he's like, if the only thing, you know, if I never speak to you again, I just want you to know, like, you changed me for the better. But then I think her speech to him afterwards is so good, where she's just like, what you're doing is so selfish. And I actually feel like if the film had gone on from there, and like been like, how do they repair this friendship after this break?
Absolutely.
But the second that she runs back to kiss him, it's like, it's not that it never, or it's not that like lesbians can't like fall in love with a man, but it just feels like it that's a moment where it just feels like it goes straight into like straight man fantasy land.
Totally.
You know,
and where like, all the like mean lesbians are mad at her for dating a guy, but like he seems to suffer no social consequences from
it. Yeah, yeah. And it's also just like I don't know how different like queer women culture was in the 90s, but it's like I have a lot of friends who are women who are queer who use different labels, and it's just like the idea that like this kind of situation would then be the instigation for like mockery and being like excised from a friend
group. A pariah, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just so silly.
To be fair, like obviously, you know, we've talked before about biphobia within the queer community, and it was definitely more pronounced in the 90s, but like to present her queer friends as uniformly turning on her for dating a man, it's homophobic. Like this movie is so rankly homophobic from beginning to end, like not just in that normal Kevin Smith way where the best friend character is homophobic. Okay, fine. I've seen Clerks. I get it. But the way that Smith thinks he can make the queer characters likable to a straight audience is to give them homophobic things to say, you know, to have them express homophobic views to show that they're cool or something like that.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, it's just really bad. Like, I don't know.
And we're not even getting into like the group sex and experimenting.
Well, that's what I mean, where I just feel like it's too many movies happening at once. Because I feel like on the one hand, it's trying to be this it's trying to be this film about this woman who really. Like who thinks she only is interested in women and then falls in love with a man. But then it's all of a sudden really just about a film that like where he's just unhappy with her amount of sexual experience.
Yeah.
Which is like really confusing the way that like the idea of like her being queer, but then it's like, oh, these experiences she had with men in high school are the issue and that like ruins a relationship. It's just like so confusing the way that all gets muddled.
Totally. And I mean, the only way it makes sense is that like part of the appeal of the straight male fantasy of seducing a lesbian is being the first man that she's slept with or the first one who she has enjoyed sleeping with. And it's this weird like sexual prowess bragging rights thing that's like so fucking toxic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so like really the problem that Holden is having is that his fantasy has ended, which I believe actually Hooper points out, like apart from his opening scene, Hooper is actually a decent character the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
But like the performance by, what's his name? Dwight Ewell was actually really good. I would say is the most competent comedic performer in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also relegated to giving advice to the white characters. Like let's not get it twisted.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, and there was like one piece of dialogue in particular that just really grossed me out. And it's like an idea that's then repeated throughout the film where like she's lying in bed with him the next day just talking about how like, you know, I always told myself like I'm not going to define myself by like, you know, who society expects me to be with. And I've always told myself that it's so silly to think there's one person out there for you, but that it like has to be this person of the other gender. And then like, the thing is, I just had to like, she basically says,
meet the right guy.
Well, yeah. And it's also just like this weird kind of being like, oh, the reason I was so like loose with women is because I was just like searching for that right one. But like, you're the one that really satisfies me. I don't need that anymore. And it's just like really gross and just feels straight out of like, just so, it's so gross.
Porn. Straight out porn. We can say it. Again, half an episode of the L word and porn. That's how Kevin Smith learned to write about queer people.
Yeah.
And like, She explicitly says that, like, in all her experimentation, really she was just looking for him, which again is like,
right.
And it's meant to be this big dramatic line where it's like, he's really like, he has finally fucked up their relationship beyond repair. And she says that, and it's meant to like make him realize what an ass he's been. But really it's just, it's continuing to perpetuate this fantasy. It's like the way a teenager comes up with a sad ending.
Yeah. Like my eyes really rolled to the back of my head when she said that. I was just like,
yeah. And it's, it feels like such a betrayal as well, because like I would say apart from Dwight Ewell, Joey Lauren Adams is the best performer in the movie. Like she's really charismatic on screen and she's mm-hmm. given dog shit writing, like some mm-hmm. of the worst writing for a female character I have seen in years. Like mm-hmm. there are 1950s films with better dialogue than this. Many of them, many of them directed by Howard Hawks. Highly recommend His Girl Friday. That's it. When I watch a movie like this, I'm just always thinking of the other movies I could watch.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's a bummer. It's just a bummer. And like, also she's put through so much. And I feel like I did like her speech after he,
proposes,
you know, professes threesome. His love.
Oh, and the other one. Sorry.
Yeah. But then like, I feel like we lose that part of her as the film goes on, because he just really subjects her to so much shame and so much humiliation for the rest of the film. I mean, just like,
it's despicable,
this digging up of her sexual history and just her his accusatory attitude. It's so vile. And like
just the way that her high school nickname is just used, you know, it's just used, like it's okay to call somebody that.
Yeah. And like it's really, I just kind of felt like, well, where is the Alyssa from earlier in the film? Because like, I just feel like she wouldn't put up with this even a little bit. And what's weird is it's like, in a way she doesn't, because she does yell at him. But what she doesn't do is like, be like, I'm done with you. Like, it's so weird, because it still feels like somehow that he's breaking up with her the whole time, you know?
Totally. And it's like, in real life, there is a method that abusers use to keep people trapped. And this movie doesn't even capture that, because he's just shitty the whole time. Like, there's no reconciliation period.
Yeah, he's just an asshole. Like, it's just like...
Absolutely. And he has no redeeming qualities.
Yeah, I mean, he really doesn't. Like, it's weird, because in the first part of the film, and again, this is where I just feel like it's like a less sophisticated film than it thinks it is. Like, I think thinks it's sophisticated. And yeah. Like,
well, this was supposed to be Kevin Smith's like big dramatic break. Like this was when he was finally had a budget and was going to do like Oscar worthy material.
Yeah. And like, I felt like the first part of the film, you're really just trying to see like Banky's this gross, you know, fucking jabroni, and Holden's the one who kind of, he's the one who has these deeper feelings of love.
Oh,
and he's
also the one who's, he talks about literature at Comic-Con. Isn't he deep? He knows Waiting for Godot.
He doesn't say like slurs, you know, like he's the sensitive good one.
Right.
And then like by the end of the film, you just hate him so much. And I feel like a sophisticated version of this film would have like done that kind of switcheroo in a way that had true meaning. Yeah. And this just felt like, oh, I just like wasted an hour and a half.
Especially because the whole movie's rooting for him. You know, the whole fucking movie wants him to win. Like the authorial voice, the other characters, everybody, even Alyssa in the end just wants the best for him. And he doesn't deserve it in the slightest. Even like, he's not even likable. Like, I get it when somebody's kind of a dirtbag, but you like him, you'd still want good things for them. But like, he's not even that. He's not even funny or charming or charismatic. He's just shitty.
Yeah. No, he really, really is. It's just so painful to watch. Like,
yeah.
And then like when it all culminates in this bizarre scene where he's like proposing a threesome, it's so strange, because here you're supposed to get kind of like the culmination of the character art, where Banky, this guy's where he's been confusingly an asshole. He actually is just like
in love with his best friend
and redirecting it towards like self-hatred and homophobia.
That could have been really interesting.
Well, yeah, that's what's so confusing about this film. It's like, again, this is another point where it like thinks it's so sophisticated, but it isn't. And then like, it's supposed to be this hilarious moment where he suggests that they all have a threesome. And it's just, again, like this point where she just is subjected to such humiliation, because here she is, someone who has been shamed by him And now
for
she's
doing
being
this exact thing
for doing this exact thing. And now she's being told you need to do this thing with this guy who pretty much openly hates and mocks you.
Yeah.
Who's responsible for this knowledge being dug up.
And she's literally begging Holden not to finish the sentence because she knows what he's thinking. She says, yeah. Please don't. And then what does he fucking say? He says, please, I need this.
And what's so weird, too, is that like he pretends like. At no point does he even ask himself, like, he's like, oh, I'm partially doing this for my friend because he needs to accept that he's gay. And it's like, well, is there anything you need to accept as well about your own sexuality?
Again, they never say the word bisexual.
Right, that maybe you want to have sex with your best friend. Like, it's just like a really, like, oh, God, it made me so, so, so uncomfortable, that whole scene. And it's supposed to be, I think, sophisticated and funny and like
and commentary
just, and commentary, yeah, and instead I really just find it like deeply, deeply uncomfortable, and I just felt such like sympathy for this character.
Absolutely.
You know,
like there's a recut of this film as a horror movie, honestly.
Yeah,
now there is something, there is an interesting wrinkle in this story that I wanted to bring up, which is 2019's Jay and Silent Bob reboot. Are you familiar with that film?
Mm-mm.
So you're familiar with Jay and Silent Bob. They show up in this movie as characters.
I guess.
They're the guys in the diner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Silent Bob tells the Chasing Amy story.
Yep.
So they're recurring characters. Obviously, Bob is played by Kevin Smith, and Jay is played by Jason Mewes. They were in Clerks. They were in pretty much all of Kevin Smith's View Askew Universe films, which was sort of his shared universe of comedies with overlapping characters, including mm-hmm. Holden and Banky and Alyssa and Hooper, who show up in films like Dogma. It's a very nerdy, like niche 90s comic book nerd thing to do, have a shared universe. Pre-Marvel, pre-DC, actually somewhat impressive.
Mm-hmm.
If only all of the movies weren't garbage. But in Jay and Silent Bob reboot is the latest addition in that franchise and was actually produced as a sort of gift to Jason Mewes for getting sober that Kevin Smith like created to like help his friend.
Mm.
And it's kind of a like victory lap of this little world. And we do see Holden and Alyssa again.
Hmm.
What's interesting is that it's Holden and Alyssa at Comic-Con again as friends now. And Holden is the sperm donor to Alyssa's children with her wife and has been acting as a father to them, like a co-parent, which is actually a pretty like... That's a sweet ending. I wish this movie deserved it.
I just don't even find it a sweet ending. I just like find any involvement of him in her life just like really,
really toxic,
unacceptable. Yeah, I'm just like, kind of like, there's nothing cute about that. Like, there's nothing.
I was curious what your reaction would be.
I hate it.
Yeah.
No. There's so many other sperm donors she could choose. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And better ones.
Yeah.
And it's meant to be like this hasn't he grown thing. And it's like, not really.
It's also just like, who cares? That's what's so like frustrating about like films like this. It's just like, I don't care. I don't care if he grows. That can be a story that happens off screen. I don't want to see it. I want to see Alyssa back at the club, living it up. I want to know more about her and her girlfriend.
Yep.
Like, I don't care.
Like, I agree. It's a Band-Aid on a sucking chest wound.
Yeah. Like,
I think overall this movie is an unsalvageable mess. And I just feel worse for having seen it.
Yeah. It's
really rare. Like, let's actually take a minute to appreciate the level to which this movie makes me feel dirty. For having seen it. Like, even Deadly Illusions I could enjoy because I could be like, wow, that's ridiculous. Whereas this is like a half-functioning android wrote it, where it's like there's glimmers of a human being behind all of this, but he is so deeply dysfunctional and fueled by his disgust with himself and the world around him that he cannot connect with another person.
Well, I think that's what I find frustrating is there's lots of like kind of interesting moments or interesting ideas, or even just like there's that moment really early on where I thought the movie would be really fun where Banky and Alyssa are trading stories about times that they've gone down on girls and it's gone horribly wrong. And like they're trading literal like scars, you know?
But the thing is, that's just a reference to Jaws.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah. It's just a reference to the scar scene in Jaws.
Oh, when I hate
Richard
that.
Dreyfuss and Quinn.
I've never seen Jaws.
Oh, it's a really good movie, actually. Oh. It lives up to the hype.
Too scary for me. I want to trust the ocean.
That's a good point. But hey, we're recording this on Halloween.
Yeah. Or just like there is something interesting about kind of like having this increasingly homophobic roommate, friend, business partner, mm-hmm. and then like having his roommate just be like, hey man, like I'm gonna kiss you and like yeah. be and like you just need to deal with whatever feelings you have. Like there was like a gentleness to that. Like that was interesting. Like there's so many tiny little interesting moments in this, but what it comes to is just so infuriating in the full plot and like just so annoying. Like I will probably never watch this movie again.
I really hope. If I never saw it again, it would be too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. It's just like more frustrating than some other movies that are just so absurdly bad, because I do think there's just like glimmers.
Yeah. There was a good movie here.
Might have been a better movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if they had been really willing to like show a queer perspective on it, or show like Holden's own understanding of his sexuality growing through being exposed to the queer community for the first time. Like, that's a real story. That's a real story that's happened to people, even people who go on to continue identifying as straight, you know? Like, you don't, like, being exposed to other ways of living helps everybody, you know? It just lets you know what's out there.
Yeah, or it could have been a story about, like, it could have been so many different stories. Could have been a story about a man, like, falling in love with like a lesbian and she never
requites.
It's always unrequiting. And right, and it's a movie about like how you move on from unrequited love and how their friendship like repairs and how totally. Like he maybe deals with any entitlement he feels towards her love.
Yeah, like you don't even need to like make him a better guy. You just have to have a movie that shows him as an asshole, you know?
Yeah. Or like it could have been a movie about like, okay, she does fall in love with him and then they like deal with like what that falling in love like fallout is for both their identities, but instead like just the fact that it becomes kind of a movie about how he thinks she's too much of a slut, like
and he needs to be more of a stud if he's gonna date her.
Yeah, like it's so crazy, like
it's so deeply misguided.
Yeah. It really is. And what's funny is, like, I do think, and this might be, like, a stretch too far, but I do think in general it just does remind me of New Jersey, where I'm just, like, I do think I do think there's a vibe to New Jersey where people are, like, living in, like, a mostly blue state and, like, people are generally, like, pretty well-educated and, like,
yeah,
consider themselves, like, relatively cosmopolitan just because you are just close to New York City and you're close to Philadelphia. But, like, there is just, like still just, I think, like, so many places, it's a really powerful undercurrent of, like, misogyny and machismo, too. Like,
I think that's definitely true of New Jersey. And I think that's definitely true of California. At least, like, some of the parts I've seen.
Maybe it's just honestly, true in all of America. I just personally I have a bone to pick with all of New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey might be just the most American state. Do you want to do Fuck, Marry, Kill? Like, Fuck, Marry, Kill, Banky, Alyssa, and Holden. I mean, we're going to kill Holden. Probably going to marry Alyssa to get her the fuck away from these jabronis.
I just can't even participate in it for this film. Yeah,
I don't blame you. Listen, we did our best, guys. We really went to bat for you this time. We really subjected ourselves to something unpleasant for your entertainment. So if you want to, you know, maybe kick us a few bucks over at patreon.com/snailsoysters, you'll get monthly bonus episodes in my film diary. But also you'll have a clean conscience because you'll know that at least we got something out of this experience. But also, if you're broke, so am I. You can always share, subscribe, however, you know, honestly, like, we don't pay for marketing this show. If you just share it with your friends, that means that's huge. That's honestly bigger than subscribing to the Patreon, is if you just tell people about us. So Yeah, that
don't
that
tell
was
people
more extemporaneous
about Chasing
than
Amy the movie.
Know. Never tell anyone about Chasing Amy. We need to let it die in darkness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much like Democracy, Chasing Amy will die in darkness.
What else? Yeah. Billy Libby did our theme music, and Abby Austin, she did our beautiful cover art, and neither of them are in Chasing Amy, which is great.
Yeah, that might be my favorite thing about them. My favorite thing that they did is be born too late to be in Chasing Amy. And you can find their social media and Allie and my own social media in the episode description. And of course, Snails and Oysters is at Snails Oysters on Twitter. For how much longer? Who can say? Less than a week. Hey, folks, it's Nat from the future here. We ended up deleting our Twitter not long after recording this episode. So just want to reiterate what Past Nat said about sharing the show with your friends. If you really like the show, that's the best way to support us.
We just don't know.
Shoot us a message if you like the show, if you have an idea for an episode. We're always looking for more bi-movies. Or if you – actually, I was about to say, if you really like Chasing Amy, hit us up. But no, I don't want to know you. I don't want to know you if you like this movie. That's not entirely true. Like, I'm sure somebody out there –
It's so terrible about this movie. I do think it's possible that, like, if you saw it when it first came out and you're like a young queer kid,
you would think, yeah, you would think that it was good.
Well, not even think that it was good. You would just like maybe like relate to it because that's how little you were starved. Totally. You had crumbs, you know.
Well, that's the thing. That's what Chasing the My Rage at Chasing Amy article gets into is like, you know, when you're in the desert, you'll drink the sand, you know.
Yeah. Ugh. Don't drink sand.
That's
water.
My second Aaron Sorkin reference this episode. That's weird.
Uh-oh.
You know what else is weird? The girl listening to this podcast. Thank you so much. Until next time, I'm Nat Roberts.
And I'm Allie Rogers.
And thanks
for being a bi ally.
Dude, that movie sucked.